I'm Charlene. In these 20-minute podcasts, I talk with memoir writers about their books, their lives, and their writing process. Sharing like this helps us all connect. As we listen, we learn about the world through the eyes of others. Their stories help us expand our views and empathize more deeply with each other. It's my pleasure now to invite you to listen in to this episode of Life Story on Soul Sciences. Hello, listeners. My guest today, again, is the wonderful, ebullient Claire-Edouine Fallingstar from San Geronimo in California. Welcome again, Claire-Edouine.
Thank you so much for having me back, Charlene. I'm glad to talk to you again.
Oh, it's been lovely. Now, I just learned that you have more than one book. The book I read is called Broth from the Cauldron, and I'm singing its praises. But tell us about your other books.
My other three books are all past life historical novels based on my past lives. The first one is called The Heart of the Fire, and it's about witchcraft in 16th century Scotland. And that was a big pagan classic, sold more than 20,000 copies in a fairly short period of time. Then the other two are set in 12th century Japan, a book and a sequel. And so the one is called White as Bone, Red as Blood, The Fox Sorceress. Second one in the series is White as Bone, Red as Blood, The Storm God. The reference to the white and the red is these two clans are battling for control of the throne, of the Japanese throne at the time. And it's the Genji and the Heike are the two clans that are battling for supremacy at the time.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'm so excited about all of it, and particularly the Scotland book, because my maternal ancestry is Scottish.
Uh-huh, right. Mine too.
And my grandmother, my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother were all visionaries.
We have a lot yourself. It can be a little, there can be aspects that can be inconvenient, you know, like I know. Yes. I've had the experience of sitting, you know, being at a party and being in the kitchen with someone and they say something and I say something back and they get all shocked and say, how do you know that? And I was like, you just said so. And they're like, no, I didn't. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, no, I'm reading their mind. Oh, no. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm sorry. And I don't know what to do other than just scuttle out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, people get freaked out. And I'm not trying to freak people out, you know.
So. No, exactly. But this is what you were saying in our first interview, too, about how we have lost our heritage. And I believe this is part of the heritage that we're picking up on, as well as, to bring it back to your books, this power of being able to recognize where we were at other moments in the history.
Right. Yes, I have that. I have such a powerful ability to go back in time. And I've had that since I was a kid. That's really what put me on a spiritual path. I was raised in an agnostic household. You know, my father was an aerospace engineer, a literal rocket scientist, right? So I was growing up with science and none of the spiritual stuff.
Yeah.
But from a very early age, you know, I can remember at three saying to my mother, oh, I'm so glad we're rich now. And she's like, oh, honey, we're not rich. And I was like, yes, we are. We eat meat every day. We have, you know, we have rug on the floor and not dirt. And then I ran into the bathroom and turned on the hot water. I said, hot water whenever we want it. We're rich. And I was like, where is this thing coming from?
Yeah.
We didn't have a television. I couldn't read. How am I coming up with that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I remembered very clearly that living in a place with a dirt floor and being hungry and walking a long way and pulling water up from a hole in the ground.
Yes.
I didn't know the word for well, but I knew that that's what we did.
Yes.
You know, because of that, I was always a little, and because I had such strong psychic abilities, I had to start looking outside the empirical playpen at a certain point. And that happened when, in 1975, I was working as a journalist and my editor came in and said, oh, there's a witch on trial for fortune telling. And I was like, I'll take that story. And, you know, in 1975 in Los Angeles, a witch is on trial for fortune telling. I mean, that's just crazy. So I went and right away, everything lit up inside me. All of a sudden, it was like, oh, hey, so after the trial, I went to something this woman had organized and said, so do you witches, you believe in past lives? She says, of course. I'm like, Oh, fine. Sign me up.
Yeah. Now tell us, was that when you started writing your first book?
A little bit after that, not immediately, certainly. I mean, you know, further along, as I, you know, first I got involved in Wicca and magic. And then as that happened, there was a woman in my first coven, a beautiful Black woman named Isis. And we had, you know, in a very intense connection. We were connected by a mutual friend, Starhawk. And as soon as I opened my door to her, we're both in our 20s, we fell into each other's arms. We're hugging and hugging and hugging. And then we look at each other and each of us says, "Who are you?" And the other one says, "I don't know." And then we keep hugging some more. You know, we had this immense past life connection, as it turned out. And so working with her, I was able to start getting a whole lot more detail on that past life that I just had bits and pieces from. And then when I went to Scotland to see if I could find the ruins of the village where we had lived, she showed me exactly where it was going to be on the map. And she had never been to Scotland. But when I found that place and found the ruins, and it was all exactly the way she said it was going to be, it was like, okay.
I love that. That's so
and
beautiful.
She was someone that I had known in that life. And yes. She was very much my elder in that life. She was a woman named Mina, who was my grandmother's age in that life.
Oh, my.
She was someone who knew a whole lot more than I did. And I was fortunate to know her in this life, and for her to take me in hand and give me some education.
Now, when you're writing, like I read early on in my life, I read Taylor Caldwell, Dear and Glorious Physician.
I've read a couple of her things too.
How she just goes into a trance and writes right from being in that place. And then other historians go rutting around, scuffling around and find out that she's absolutely accurate. Is that kind of your process, or do you have a different?
Yeah, that's what I do. I do a hypnosis. I do hypnosis. I've actually got it recorded on at this point, I can do it myself. I used to have other people help put me under and take notes. But so my coven sisters would call it going to the movies. They loved taking me on my trips because I was got so much information, you know. But then eventually, of course, I was able to just make my own trance tape and use that to go where I needed to go, and then talk into another tape to record it and then transcribe it. And then, of course, rewrite it a million times till it looks good.
Yes, that I'm glad you said that, because I think that people often have the understanding that if you're writing from trance, mm-hmm. or from a deep meditative space, that you don't revise. And that's not been my experience.
Oh, no, you've got to pretty it up, you know. Yeah. I'm not saying changing the facts, just make it sound good, you know.
Yeah.
I can actually write, you know. I'm actually a good writer.
You are.
And so that's, you know, not everybody who writes stuff is actually good at writing.
That is
I'm actually
true.
Good at writing.
Yes, you studied it, obviously. Did you go to school to become a journalist?
Well, I originally went to school to try to become an anthropologist, but quickly got kicked out of the department for, being a woman and refusing. I went to study archaeology, and they wouldn't let women go on digs at that point. You're my age, so you're probably not too surprised. Because we had special hygiene needs that could not be met in the field. Let's just say the professor wasn't happy when I said, whatever you're using to clean up your SH... blank T, I can use to clean up my blood. When do we leave?
Good for you. Good for you.
Let's just say, yeah, except it got me thrown out of the department. So.
Probably the best thing. So what did you do from there?
So then from there, I went into English, yes. And I studied English literature and English composition. And that's when I started moving into more of the writer zone. I mean, I always wanted to write, but I just wanted to have anthropology as one of the things I wrote about.
But that is so much the same thing as having these past life experiences, isn't it? Except you're doing it from the interior rather than the exterior. Am I going to?
No, I'm just excavating in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Saves on airfare.
true. Although I do love going. I was just in Turkey last summer, and, you know, so going to these old places and.
Yes.
You know, having some of the memories that I have and then being able to put it together with what's actually physically there is very satisfying to me.
Yes.
The stuff that I, you know, when I was, when I was having memories about this place in Scotland and my past life there, you know, like one thing that was disturbing to me is I kept remembering there being a Catholic priest in the village, but all my research said that Scotland was Protestant by then. So I was visiting some of my cousins. I still have cousins in Scotland, one of whom is a history teacher. And I mentioned this, and she says, well, where exactly are we talking? And I told her, she says, oh, they're still Catholic there. They never changed.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, I'm getting chills.
Absolutely.
well then.
Yeah, then it's okay. Did you do a lot of research after you had the body of your work together?
Absolutely. I wanted to try, you know, and especially with the Japan books, because I didn't know anything about 12th century Japan. You know, it's not something we get taught here in this country. So it was very, you know, intense to be, you know, going back and, you know, through the history books and going, oh, shoot, it did happen exactly that way. Okay, how could I possibly know that? You know, that's how I, I'm a very skeptical person myself. That's how I've become convinced about past life material is I remember stuff. I can find it in the history books. I know I didn't learn it anywhere. So it's like, well, this is the best explanation I've got right now is that I really was there in a different format. This life, I was illiterate. So that's a very different reality than being someone who reads and writes. Whereas in my Japanese past life, I was highly literate. So, you know, there's things that really, you know, that really change. You know, it's not like just you in a different costume. It's, you know, you're going to be very different depending on how you were raised in that culture and many other things.
Yes.
But still recognize that part of you that is constant.
Yes.
You know, the soul part that's constant.
Yes, yes. I think of it very often as a multifaceted crystal. And so it, depending on where the light is shining, certain of those facets will show up in a lifetime.
Yes, I think that's a beautiful description, Charlene. That's lovely.
Yeah, the constancy is the light, but you never know. It's always a risk and a gamble and a like the kaleidoscope on your eye.
Right.
What patterns
right, right.
will emerge? And so taking whatever patterns are there, and I think cleansing them and cleaning them and polishing them and becoming as aware as possible in a loving way is really part of that. But now, so did you go to Japan and visit?
Yes, yes. I researched in Japan too. Of course, I can't, in this life, I don't read or speak Japanese. So, you know, that does limit my sources in a way that was so very frustrating to me.
Yes.
But nonetheless, to be in, you know, some of the same places, just being in the same places is so evocative and, you know, it would always stimulate a whole lot of different memories. And I still love it there so much. I love everything about Japanese culture very much.
And how long does it take you to put a book together, would you say, typically?
A very long time. I mean, especially if you're writing from, you know, first you have to get all the material on your tapes, then you listen to the transcribe of the tapes, then you rewrite, like I said, about a million times. And the other thing is, of course, I just haven't been able to make money at my writing so far, which means I had to put most of my energy into things that did make me money, which in my case was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've taught, I basically do Hogwarts for grownups, you know, where I've taught people Wicca and shamanism over many, many years now, 40 years of teaching.
Good for you.
I did many years of a one-year apprenticeship program where people would study, you know, between 10 and 15 people a year would commit to intensive study with me over that year.
Wow.
And then sometimes we do an advanced year beyond that if there was enough people in the group who were ready to hit the next level.
Right.
So I've I love that too. I love teaching. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
But I am sad that that I haven't been able to do more writing than I have. And now that I'm older and semi-retired, I plan to kick out another couple books. I've got another one that's probably 3/4 done. That's more like this Broth from the Cauldron. It's a book of stories. Although the second one is going to be a little more of a humor memoir. It's going to be some of the funnier stories.
What a great idea and what a great thing for our time. We all need to be reminded of joy and humor and relaxing.
And the spirituality is humorous. Like if you go, you've sat at the feet of no doubt many
yes.
of these monks. You know how much joy they're usually radiating? They're usually happy.
Yes.
They're usually having some fun.
And a lot of that may be because they're getting a lot of money for teaching, but nonetheless.
It's definitely more than that, the ones I've seen. I live near Spirit Rock, and that's a place where it's a big Buddhist center. And so I'll go there and meditate sometimes or just hang out, you know, go learn. You know, it's not like I stay within my own lane of only focusing on people in Wicca. I'm very curious about spirituality and whatever package, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't go far wrong with meditation, right? I mean,
no, and
that's
in fact,
always going to be good for you.
It is totally. And in fact, it's my skeptical and very heavy-handed humor aside, the studies show that the meditation practice itself will stimulate neurons in the left prefrontal cortex, which is the seat of happiness and joy.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that. That was good.
The studies are in. It's from Richard Davidson at University of Wisconsin at Madison. And he was a student. He's a student, of course, of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. The practices themselves are quite powerful, and I've written one book about it, but I'm going to write another one. So,
okay.
Yeah. But I love the idea that you are going toward joy and humor from your past, because you had some difficulties, and I don't mean to go prying in there, but I know that it's important for people to understand that you weren't born in a meadow with flowers and everything worked out for you. That's not the story of your life.
No, but I was conceived in a meadow with flowers. That's pretty close.
I wonder where that came from. I've never used that before.
My parents like to make love outdoors, so I come by my pagan tendencies very naturally.
Yeah, you do. It's a lineage.
Yeah, they got arrested for making love up on Mount Tam when they were in their late 40s.
No kidding. Oh, I love that. Oh, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah, they were making love, and all of a sudden there's a ranger with his gun out saying, "Get off her, mister, get off her." He thinks this old lady is being raped, right?
Oh, my goodness.
"Officer, it's my husband." And she's like, he's like, "Well, then why aren't you home in bed?" That's not how we roll.
Yeah, that's not how they rock and roll. God love them. That is a beautiful story. Thank you so much again, Kedwin, for all of your joy and your love of people and all of the experience you bring to the world. Thank you so much. Broth from the Cauldron is available again. Tell our listeners where.
You can get Broth from the Cauldron from Amazon. You can also order from your favorite bookstore and tell them it's from She Writes Press. And they will be able to get that for you.
Terrific. And when your next book is ready, I hope you'll come back and we can chat some more. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to be with you today, Charlene, as always.
Thank you. And for you. Bye now.
Bye.
That's it. That's all for today. Many thanks to Kevin MacLeod for that lovely music, Carefree. And many thanks to all of you who make these podcasts possible. Remember, take good care of each other. Bye for now.